But I could not, oh, precious heaven, I could not, and so I lay in a very torpor of dread despair of terrible fear lest I should actually be buried alive. Ah, my friends, you who have never experienced this, cannot know just what it is, this fear of being buried alive. You may sympathize as you read, but you cannot understand my most awful and intense suffering at this time. At last they came and laid flowers on my breast, beautiful pink and white roses, but their odor sickened me and I made one more great but vain effort to speak. It seemed utterly useless. Then they laid me in a snowy hard white casket, and the crowd gathered around to listen to the gray-haired man of God giving my funeral service. Such writhing torments and horrors as I experienced through that sermon I cannot half explain to you, only that at the close as they passed around to view me for the last time I settled down into a state of desolate waiting for my fearful doom. At last my husband came and held up over my casket the tiny form of our beloved Grace Marie that she might see her mother, too, for the very last time. "Oh, oh, oh, Mama," she shrieked, wildly. "Don't look all cold and dead that awful way, come, come and take me." Like lightning swiftness a warm power went shooting through my veins, and like a thunderclap I raised and strained my child to my shrouded breast. In all the commingling emotions of that heart clasp, I knew that I had succeeded in letting them know that I lived as did they, and I was in raptures of thanksgiving. Then there came a blank like a dream that is past, and I stood there in the floor strong-limbed and free, and was the very embodiment of health and strength. Such a strange, glad feeling. I looked quickly in the direction of my casket, and wonder of wonders, there was my pale corpse clasping close my beautiful child. I saw them wrest my darling from the death grasp of those nerveless fingers, and settle the wasted body down close again in the casket's depths. A band of the departed soon came and explained that I was now a spirit as were they. I grew very contented and happy and went to dwell with them in peace. Long afterward they told me of the strange reason of my so-called insanity, which was nothing more nor less than the spirit of an East Indian princess taking mortal possession of me to carry out revengeful ends in the closing scenes of her short earth life, and when this band succeeded in releasing me from her influence, was the very moment in which I became so physically transfixed. The shock of my baby's sorrow had awakened so intense and rather extreme circulation that the sudden reaction had snapped my vital part, that I passed into the reality of death instantly, only to have the pleasure of the eternal life forever and ever. "I come to give you thanks for your forbearance, and depart with my blessing on your heads. Yours for life in love. Religion of the future, Denton. We venture to say that the new movement will spring from the spiritualistic ranks which by and by, all of the orthodox will unhesitatingly recognize all of the spiritual teachings and reinterpret their doctrine in the spirit of the new. We hope there will be a reinterpretation of the old, and it is to be hoped that all religions will convincingly tend toward the same goal. Spiritualism will satisfy the essential needs of the human heart. You drift tempest-tossed, on the ocean of life. And you need guidance and comfort and encouragement. In the face of the unrest which surrounds you, you want to have the assurance of a ground where your anchor can catch. You want to know your goal and the direction in which you have to steer. All of this must be supplied by spiritual knowledge, and where your knowledge is insufficient, faith steps in. Spirituality is inborn in every soul in the same way as gravity is inalienably part of all matter. Everything is a particle that exists interlinked with the whole of the cosmos. It is swayed by it, it is attached to it, its momentum is determined by it in the exact proportion of its weight, of its position, and generally of its relation to the universe. The innate energy of every particle, every atom presses forth in one direction or another beyond its own limits, as if it were yearning beyond itself. No piece of matter is existence in itself. Its nature and its movements are conditioned by the rest of the universe, and it can find the fulfillment of its belonging only outside its own energy. In the same way, every sentient soul yearns beyond itself and becomes easily conscious of the fact that it is only a part of an immeasurably great whole, that stretches forth into unknown infinitudes, and that the significance of its life lies outside the sphere of its ego. Spiritualism is so strong that it may be counted as the deepest passion of which man is capable. It is possessed of a motive power which excels all other passions, and can, if misdirected, lead to deeds which otherwise would be impossible, such as sacrifice of oneself or of one's own deity who is believed to demand such offerings. Spiritualism enters into every fiber of man's spiritual existence, and throughout the development of human actions it remains the factor which adjusts the relation of the individual to the all-important factor. It grows and matures with the growth and maturity of man. It weaves out of his experiences a world of conceptions in which it appoints him to his place, assigns his duties, and furnishes his direction for his conduct. The functions of spiritualism, however, go deeper still. Your entire world is the actualization of eternal types which develop according to law, and brings into existence these possibilities which in philosophy are called Platonic ideas. Accordingly, man is not a mere congeries of atoms, he is more than a corporal conglomeration of matter, he is the actualization of the type of his personality. His essential and characteristic being consists in the ideas he thinks, in the aims he pursues, and in the significance which he possesses for the great movement of human life. Life is eternal and has made its appearance in corporeal and visible shape, and no thinking man will ultimately deny the existence of another life. Spiritualism reminds you of the eternal background against which the fleeting phenomena of the material world take shape. This eternal is the essential part of life, that transfigures the transient in which it is actualized. The higher man rises, the better he understands how to distinguish between faith and knowledge. In the dogmatic state, you are like children, being nursed with fairy tales and parables, but in the state of manhood you shall see face to face, and have a clear and unequivocal comprehension of the truth. When once one has caught some vision and hope of the fullness of life that spiritualism reveals, when he has seen some glimpses of the ideal spiritual realm to which its aspirations point, he is then concerned only in making that ideal a reality. No man becomes a saint by dreaming of heaven. Faith can never satisfy the longing soul. It is ever looking forward. He sees the promise of spring in the storms of winter. He sees the handiwork of nature and he finds the promise of full life everywhere. You are nearer to the psychical moment than you know. Revelations from the world of mind, the realm of the spiritual, are alike craved and claimed in all lines of life, religious, social and even political. You are not alone in this movement. No, far from it. You have on your earth level-headed men who give themselves openly to the study or acceptance of the physical phenomena, and as well from king to baronet, show revived interest and faith in the spiritual phenomena. But some writers, professors and preachers take up what someone calls the psychical craze and give their most matter-of-fact paragraphs and preachments to some phase of it. The mere possibility of such stories coming in these tunes from staid newspaper correspondents and finding such accepting the daily statements of press, shows what a change has come upon the public mind since the days when ghost stories of this nature were whispered mainly in the fireside corners and confidential gossip guarded by strict pledges against a scoffing world. Spiritual phenomena are subjects of special interest to the intellectual world at the present time, mainly as it relates to the spiritual laws for the formation of a correct man and also a correct government for all men. Even the tremendous question of life hereafter is held in abeyance before the vital interest in grasping the relation of the spiritual laws and forces to the earth life. Christian Science, mental science, new thought, etc. are all relative to spiritual laws and controlled wholly by spiritual influences. The psychic teacher will serve to illustrate the question of the occasional opening of man's normal vision to the knowledge of the existence of spiritual beings, and further to show the purpose of such awakening, as well as to explain the nature of it. He says, the human eye and ear are tuned to the perception of waves or vibrations of light and sound traveling at velocities that have been measured. There are vibrations below those to which the eye and ear are tuned of which man is absolutely unconscious, yet such vibrations do exist. It is true that the lower you go in the scale of vibration, the more nearly you approach the inorganic world. On the other hand, the higher you go in the inorganic world, The higher you go in the scale of vibration and the closer you come to unknown forces and to the brink of a world that forces itself upon your consciousness. There is no obstacle to force vibrating at high velocities. As light penetrates glass, it penetrates any organic matter. And the soul, the spirit, the ego, partakes of the qualities of these forces and to a much higher degree may be a legitimate deduction. Commonly, it is its disembodied state that is looked to as the one to put it into the active exercise of these forces, but that sometimes even while in the body bent, it breaks through the muddy vesture of decay and touches the unknown keys of harmony and omnipotence in the universe of pure power. The history of genius itself testifies as well as the indisputable evidence of psychic power and phenomena which the scholars and scientists now recognize, and are, above all else, concerned to investigate. All poets have signalized their consciousness of rare moments, when they were superior to themselves, when a light, a freedom, a power came to them which lifted them to performances they were wholly unable to reach at other times. Your inspiration comes from the higher forces and sometimes from the higher spheres of spiritual truth, and touches the plane where life means something powerful, and that can only be measured by eternity. These forces make you feel first of all the indifference of circumstances, that you have called in other than material forces to your aid, is the thing that makes you a strength and an inspiration to mankind, as all the psychic teachers of today are conspiring to set forth. The swinging of time's pendulum in the direction of the psychical, is clearly indicated by introducing experiments in psychic phenomena into students' classrooms, and bespeaking truth for mediumistic demonstrations and by this trend of all thought and philosophy, to locate human power and achievement in the mental or spiritual forces. Science is merely searching the sixth sense in man, and the spiritual moment that may break in upon this great mystery is perchance, not so far distant. The spiritual viewpoint which has been dimly presented to man by teachers and mystics of long ages, may at length, declare itself in man's consciousness, which is a point to revolutionize the whole life problem. How many writers whose prophetic souls disclose the might and meaning of this spiritual awakening? There are hundreds who are alive to the force of this distinction in the unveiling of spiritual truth to man and who follow the vision to its surest heights of blessedness and power in the uplifting of mankind. This unveils the glad realms of life and power to man, and in all embracing joy of it, no dismal goadings of conscience that mark the darkened hour, find any place. Once the veil is lifted between man and the place where joy resides at the heart of creative being, all is well. It is ignorance that makes error and all its haunting monitors in man's pathway. It may be that in the time of ignorance, conscience is the little spark of celestial fire that struggles to light the way to the true haven of spiritual truth. But once the vision is made clear, the narrow mission of science is at an end. If you wish to reform a man, do not tell him that he is a sinner, show him who and what he is, and he will reform himself, and if he holds the balance of power in his hands, he will reform the world, which is directly in line with spiritual laws, and one who gives the true vision with his means to forward it, it would surely know how to meet all the difficulties, the short-sighted ones he could conjure up in his pathway. It is more than a faith which is original as the spiritualists acknowledge it, that illumines your presentation of the case. It is a truth that is mighty to save by anchoring itself in leaders on the heights of the struggle in the firing line of truth. This is a truth that has been given to the people from the creation of your world, and no great thing was ever accomplished in your world without inspiration, but lacking the means to make his inspiration available in the life of men, many a seer and medium have missed the end of his vision. When the light breaks at the top of the world, and the men who see the best things, have power to bring them to pass, the millennium should not be far distant by whatever name the brethren are pleased to call it. Meantime, the undercurrent of interest in spiritual things pertaining to the higher forces perceptible everywhere, must naturally prepare the way for men and women of genius who can focus and interpret the psychic or spiritual movement, and turn it to the highest service of mankind. That it shall bring a glimpse of the truth on earth for which weary, heavy-laden men and women, as well as the dwarfed and misdirected children of men, may well thank the spirits and their mediums. The church is in the midst of one of the most appalling crises in its history. The reason is of its false teachings, as it claims of radical criticism, and in the name of scholarship, whereas, the enemies of the past have been the reporters chiefly of outsiders, the present enemies are inside leaders in a great scholastic apostasy entrenched in foremost positions in pulpits, in the press, in educational institutions and even in theological seminaries. Once the great aim of religious endeavor was to bring all men to church adherence, to confession of one or the other of the faiths. They have been working at that for centuries, and there remains just about as much real sin in the world as ever, there remains as much unnecessary misery, as much injustice and wrong. The world is far from being saved. The founders of Christianity taught men to be patient, meek peacemakers, pure in heart, neighborly, sincere, just, loyal to their best ideas. His followers could not content themselves with things as simple as these. They sought out subtleties, they taught men to dispute over historical and traditional data, they proclaimed that men would be saved by faith. There are many who call themselves preachers of the gospel, whose good news consists in this, that men have only to force themselves into mental activity to accept this or the other faith or tradition, and they will have accomplished the will on high. They will have saved their own souls. Do you mean to say that you have a moral universe, where the one great thing required is that men should believe some things they can know nothing about? To tell the thief, the swindler, the liar, the bankrupt and the social outlaw that what the great judge of all requires of them is nothing more than that they should believe some chapter in the Bible, history, or some theory in some celestial place, may have indeed been the sound of good news to them. This seems a cheap and easy escape from the terrors of the law without the rigor of justice. The religion that is to save the world is spiritualism which underlies right action, that which burns itself into the depths of a man and forces him to follow the truth, to serve the right, to battle wrong, to succor need, to give all he has, even life itself, for noble ends. Do you believe in goodness, right, justice, love, truth, and to choose spiritualism as your guidepost? Now do you admire these principles? If you do, follow them. This is the truth that will save the world and be the coming religion. Man's Possessions, Stephen Terhune. The universe is boundless and unerring, its revelations are implicit in all the processes of nature, and explicit too, so far as human vision, in mortals, is concerned. Men of science have not been as yet sufficiently cleared and strengthened to perceive all of the spiritual forces given to man, to consider what is involved in the idea of evolution and progress, as applied to the whole universe. The spiritual forces are facts, or, are they dreams? If they are facts, what illuminating facts they are! Your world is but a stage, and men and women play their parts. You see in the mighty process of evolution, an eternal struggle toward more and more self-perception, and fuller and more all-embracing existence, not only the part of what is customarily spoken of as creation, but in so far as nature is an aspect of man's spiritual nature. So far as science is concerned, you must dare to extend the thought of growth, progress and development tip to the highest of all that you can realize of the spiritual laws. And your own struggles and efforts, and disappointments and aspirations, are evidence of the effort toward fuller, completer and more conscious existence. The Christian idea of God is not omnipresent, omniscient and omnipotent. If it were, Christians would not believe as they do, that God is self-determined and complete. Our God is love, who yearns, who suffers, who enters into storm and conflict, and is subject to conditions as the soul of it, all conditional, not artificial and transitory, but inherent in the process of producing force and conscious beings, and essential to full self-development. Friends, did you ever stop to think of the adversities that uncover the riches of life? You might never know their real value but for the less worthy things you have valued too highly, you might never know how rich you really were, but for the harsh hands that despoil you of that which you once counted as riches. The piercing sorrows are the ones that break through the crust of life and open their worth under the surface. You do not find out what is in you until you lose a dear one that you dearly loved, You learn in time to bless the hand that seemed so cruel when it took her from some sheltered nook and compelled you to battle with naked fists against the world. Destitution of natural things is the fate that awaits you all. Some may know it during life, and in some measure, its losses must be in every life, while all must someday lose the grip on earthly things, and must bid farewell to all its possessions, and carry out of your early stage of being only your own selves. When the real men, the spirit is freed from all earthly burdens, it is surprising to see how much remains. The man is here with his will, memory, imagination, his power to create and to conquer, to make riches of the heart to heart, to win friends, to enter into fellowship with the spirits of all ages, to appreciate and possess the universe of things that are eternal and imperishable. Life is just what you make it on the earth, plane, or spiritual plane. Neither pain nor poverty nor even death can come to you. The secret of earth life is the discovery of spirit life, which is eternal. Your abiding place here is unfading riches, the perennial blossoms, the streams that flow forever, and follow you all through the desert. Science, Spiritualism, Theology, William Denton. Friends, you must bear in mind that there is the widest possible distinction between the facts witnessed by spiritual records or demonstrations, which are plain statements, and the interpretation which we have been accustomed to place upon these facts that have been associated in our minds for ages, and the modes of expression with which we have been clothed, as set forth by us. And the conclusions be proved to which spiritual science or its phenomena seem to point, then it is found at the most to contradict some preconceived notions which you have been used to read, or traditional modes which you have accepted in interpreting it. We will say that even if the spiritualists were convinced of inaccuracies as to some matters of detail, that of itself would no more disprove the truth of essential matters revealed, than the inaccuracies being detected in any other channel. The conclusion to which the course of all scientific observation seems to tend, is that all the complex phenomena of your world are due to simple, original causes which, however once set in motion, have been working through progressive and well-marked evolutionary stages from the first nebulous condition to which you may trace primary matter up to a point where all further evolution has been arrested. The nebulous matter out of which this visible order of the universe was formed, has been the debris of former organized worlds, as astronomy now appears to indicate. The great facts which alone are material to the purpose, are plainly and simply stated, that the elements of which your world and the people are composed, were once in a nebulous and disorganized condition. The controlling intelligence called them into being first, then placed them under the active operation of forces which evolved by successive stages, the complex world that you have around you. All that you can do, or that you ought legitimately to attempt, is to take the plain statements as facts established on evidence of spiritual intercourse, and then draw the conclusions which properly follow these statements with any other known facts which bear upon this subject of investigation. The only conclusion that you can rationally come to, is that spiritualism is so essentially progressive that no student who recognizes these necessary conditions could at once reject the whole group of facts and conclusions which form the province of any one study like theology, because they may seem at variance with the conclusions of any other special study, or of scientific thought. The most you can fairly argue in such a case is to say, here are facts which in different fields of thought seem to verify different conclusions, and laws which on their own ground seem sufficiently established, yet are difficult to reconcile with each other. All that a fair mind can conclude is that the clue to a future life is found, and you must leave the solution to spiritual forces, knowing that the discovery of this fact may at any time supply this clue and guide you to this law, which may be found to harmonize with all other laws. And if this be so with scientific progress, then to say that at the present stage of knowledge and research some facts recently brought to light in the material world appear to conflict with their conclusions, that have been hitherto accepted by the theologians, is unwarrantable and illogical. No one, unless he be the eeriest charlatan, will say that spiritualism has exhausted all the possible facts that may be discovered, or that the laws which spiritual science lays down are so established that our research into nature is perfect, and theology or science can never modify them. But again, we are met with another current objection, and that is scientists in the ordinary acceptation of the term, think they are so progressive and adding fresh facts to its store of knowledge and enlarging the range of its investigation, while Christian theology is not progressive, but remains constant to the system it has taught for centuries. The facts which are its groundwork are those of a history of events which happened at definite times long ago, or have been made known by particular exponents of a divine message to man. Unless fresh facts happen of the sort, or a future revelation is made bearing upon the subject, no progress can from the nature of the case be looked for in theology. And as to any fresh revelation, it would be going too far perhaps, to say that if truth has ever been revealed, no further light ever can or will he given to man. When one truth has been definitely established on facts fully ascertained, no change is possible except in the direction of error. Reason and common sense are the faculties by which knowledge is apprehended by the human mind, whether in the material or spiritual world. Spiritualism is professedly communication from another world not cognizable by human senses, which nevertheless, when once communicated, are to be apprehended by the ordinary process of reasoning. If therefore spiritual science is rightly understood, there could hardly be a collision, for spiritual science begins where the other ends. Friends, spiritualism is the science which reason deduces from facts, and in building it up, it is essential that the process of reasoning be followed. As in every other science, we find that the whole is professedly built upon a basis of facts, and consists of conclusions drawn from them. The existence of spiritualism itself is a great fact, its history is a course of events linked together by cause and effect. There is indeed a more noticeably characteristic system as compared with any other religion of faith, and its basis is professedly a collection of facts. Spiritualism is no theory of life and death, like Plato's and others, no system of the schools, no pious dream, but a knowledge of living based upon facts and a life and a literature grouped around them. You must take it as an admitted axiom, that any true science rests upon the basis of all known facts, and that her conclusions are drawn by generalization from all particulars that bear on any given point. Is it not perfectly clear that no observer, indeed no group of observers in any time or place, can claim to observe or ascertain all facts or phenomena which bear on this subject for himself or themselves, but is bound to take the evidence of other competent observers? To refuse to accord this belief to such evidence when it tells of matters that have not come within your own experience, argues no scientific spirit but the mere incredulity of ignorance. Spiritual phenomena are demonstrated facts. They rest upon such evidence as establish proof and must be admitted as sufficient evidence for all we claim. To reject these facts as being contrary to ordinary experience, is utterly unscientific. At any time, a scientific thinker, if satisfied of the competence and credibility of other observers who bring fresh facts to his knowledge, is bound to accept their testimony and marshal the added facts with those already ascertained, even though they may be wholly unknown to himself. So too, with regard to kindred objections that the spiritual evidence deals with, are matters not cognizable by human faculties, phenomena of the spirit world of which you know nothing because you have no means of observing its facts or laws, of which therefore the scientific mind can take no account. That objection is precisely the same as if a physician refused to take into consideration any spiritual phenomena on the ground that his science dealt with the body and could take no cognizance of things of the spiritual world. Every doctor knows or should know that there are facts and laws of the spirit world which, little as they may be understood and inexplicable by any material science, are so real that he cannot disregard them. You must accept all that you can learn about them, and take them into account as far as you are able. All reason and experience and the universal observation of mankind teach you that there is a series of phenomena observable in your world which are unexplainable by any other source than by a spirit, a departed human being who once lived and breathed, and had his being, and moving indeed, on a plane so different from things cognizable by natural sense, that your faculties hardly can grasp them. Now it is of the spheres in which these forces move, the material world in which we tell you. If you only dealt with matters which ordinary experience could observe, and the laws that human faculties could induce, it would be wholly unnecessary. Indeed, as a divine disclosure, it would be a contradiction in terms.